Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's Modern Drama Podcast. Today my special guest is, he's a fantastic drummer, so right off the bat, you know, that's how I could describe him. He's a super nice guy. Everybody likes working with him, which is very important, as we know, in this business, because that's how you get ahead. You know, as we talk about all the time, and I'll keep saying it over and over as a lesson, your attitude is going to get you the gig just as much as your talent. So let's all keep that in mind at all times. So my guest is not really... You know, some people might say he's a Broadway drummer, but he's not a Broadway drummer at all. He just happens to do a couple of Broadway gigs because he has a vast resume, and Broadway is part of it, but that's not his main gig. So we're going to talk about that and talk about his beginnings and some other things that he's been doing over the years. And ladies and gentlemen, Clint DeGannon.
Hey.
How are you?
Buddy. Hey, Billy. How's it going, man?
Good. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. We're keeping it going now. We're keeping it going, right?
Yeah. You know, as we all know, I was hoping 7-8 months ago, I didn't have to talk about the pandemic anymore. But, you know, it's better. But, you know, we're still dealing with a lot of that. So I refresh my old mind for a second, because we met at an outdoor show in a park across the street from J&R Music World. Oh my God, they used to have concerts. And I think that was more than 25 years ago, and you were playing with Tom Scott.
Oh yes, I remember that. Yeah, sure.
And Dave Matos was on guitar. That's what I meant.
Dave Matos. He's an extraordinary musician, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I'm fuzzy. Was that the same day that Bobby Caldwell played and I met John Gurin that same day?
I don't think Bobby Caldwell was there that day. And the reason why I say I don't think that is because I'm a huge Bobby Caldwell fan, and I probably would have known if he was. I would have been hanging out before, after, whenever. No, I think we had a hit. I think we were by ourselves, I think.
Yeah, so I guess Bobby was one of those concert series, I think, because I saw a bunch of shows. J&R, for those who don't know,
J&R
was a record store back in the
day. Yes, record
and
store.
It was a huge record store in Manhattan. And in that park right across from them, they used to have a concert series. So that's where we had first met. God, that had to be over 25 years ago.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word. Wow, Billy. I think you're probably right. Jeez. I didn't think of it that long ago, but maybe, because I remember that we did a little tour with Tom Scott. It was like a mini tour, and he had a couple of gigs. We were like alongside Jethro Tull was over there. So I saw Doan, and that was in Ohio. We had like two gigs in one day. We were doing festivals anyway. Yeah. So that's a long time ago, Billy. So
yeah,
a century.
I know, but that goes back to yeah. when we met, and then we became friends, and we kept in touch, you know, throughout the years. And I followed, you know, I'm a fan of your playing and your career, of course. Thank but you. Yeah, that's when it all started.
A long time ago, but so.
And then I well, now that was the first time, and then I think the last time, I don't know if it was with the Fab Four, you were filling in Rich Pagano, or I came to see you at Beautiful on Broadway, the Carole King show.
I have a feeling Fab Four was before Beautiful, when you came to Beautiful.
Right.
Because the gigs I did with Fab Four was like 10 gigs. It was a season of concerts, and that was in 2016. It was culminated in the Beacon Theater, and then a week at City Winery. And I think I saw you at the Beacon, right?
Yeah, so, that was at the Beacon.
At that point, Rich had come on. Rich was
right. That was the first time, right?
So he was fronting the band, sort of. You know, he was put in the front. He wasn't playing much drums yet. And then after that, he, you know, we were sort of splitting the chair, and for the last week of gigs, he was good. And then he felt healthy enough to be back, and you know. Who can replace Rich? He's unbelievable. And
you did a good job. And that was pretty quickly too, right? That was put together pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, that was, yes. So it was like, you know, in a week or two. Well, and what happened is that each concert, the way those guys work, you know, I think if my memory serves me correctly, there are 211 original songs that the Beatles wrote in their short time period. That's incredible. That doesn't include the covers. And every concert we did were different songs. So, and you know, of course, you have like a tangential familiarity and, oh yeah, I know that song. Well, you don't really know it. Right. You don't really know it to play it. And so, you know, there was a lot of intense work very, very quickly, and, you know, no charts. Not that they couldn't have written them out, but they were the guys, right? So they didn't. So what I wound up doing on that gig in particular is taking live performances of Fab Four and A-B-ing them with Beatles recordings and seeing what I thought was essential to give them during the concerts that they were used to hearing that might have deviated from the Beatles, be it tempo, be it fills, be it, you know, arrangements, whatever it was, things right. that they were used to and needed to hear, which when you're, you know, when you're plugging into somebody else's gig, you have to be aware of that. And you don't always know exactly what those bullet points are. So you try and err on the side of caution. But anyway, that was the challenge there. And so we did 10 concerts, and every concert were different songs.
Yeah, I know. They do different albums or a whole album or a different theme. And so,
different themes.
Yeah, like you say. And that's true, because everybody thinks they know, you know, songs that they've heard a million times, but getting up and playing them is totally different.
You always realize what you don't know when you have to sit down and actually go through the thing bar by bar, you know.
Yeah.
You take
well, you see, and I like the fact that you also, because Rich changes not that much, but, you know, of course, he adds his own flavor to it. So I like that you actually studied that. You see, now that's what you just said is excellent advice, because you do your homework. And I think that's why people call you a lot at the last minute, because they know they can count on you, because you're quick at, like, you know, you're professional, and then they know that you're going to be able to do the job. And another scenario, because after we saw each other at Beautiful, it was not too long ago that you had sat in and Will, our good buddy Will Lee, who we all love.
Know and love, yeah.
The great called book. You, like, I think, I don't know how long, but it was really a short amount of time, and said, I need you to fill in and play a gig for TV, I think it was, with Stevie Wonder.
This is about my favorite story that ever happened to me as a professional in New York City. It's my favorite New York City story. In a nutshell, I was at a rehearsal at Euphoria, which is a rehearsal studio in New York, with a band, the John Miller Band, and great musicians in that band. And it was 10 of 4. And Will called and said, can you be at Radio City in an hour to play Sir Duke with Stevie Wonder? And I, you know, those moments where you just kind of go, I didn't immediately say yes, because I didn't quite believe what I was hearing. And then of course I did. So what had happened there was they had two rhythm sections. This was Tony Bennett's, I think, 91st birthday concert at Radio City, sold out. They were broadcasting it on TV, and they were making a record. So
wow.
So an hour before, so Will and I go over there. He got the call not long before that, and they told him, you know, call a drummer that you think would be right for this. So thankfully, he gave me a call, and. I was riding my motorcycle at the time, so I walk into Radio City. Will and I got there about the same time. I got, like, you know, just fucked up clothes, and, you know, it's the stage is lined beautifully with musicians dressed to the nines. You're right. Everybody looks beautiful, and lights, and Will and I are just glued to walking in there and walking down the ramp toward the stage. And Stevie was there. And at this point, and Tom Scott was actually the music director.
Wow.
Yes, he was music directing, but it was a New York band for the most part. And Lady Gaga had provided, you know, she has a rhythm section. I'm sure they're great players, young guys. The original intent was for those guys to be playing with Stevie, and it was like there were two rhythm sections that tried, and they were sort of, it's not that they didn't know Stevie or didn't love him or weren't great musicians, but it was almost like they were on either side of knowing his stuff and et cetera. So anyway, there was no preparation for that particular thing. So that was, Sir Duke. So we ran through Sir Duke, and then they said, okay, he seemed happy. He was a little grouchy at the time, because he was impatient. And then we did Visions. No, we didn't get to rehearse Visions, but we were going to play Visions. I'm like, what do you mean we can't rehearse it? No, he said that rehearsal already happened. It was a star-studded cast, and they were on a schedule. So we were going to, now I was going to be playing, I've never played Visions before. I had heard it. It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
It was like, I wasn't even sure what to do with it. I don't think there are drums on it, on the original. But anyway, so we wound up doing that. And then we wound up doing, they said, okay, we're going to go home now. They said, no, you're not, because Stevie's happy and he wants to play Happy Birthday. So we did Happy Birthday, and then we said, well, we're going to go home. I guess I got the order reversed. That was at the end. But then he said, he's happy. He wants to do Sign, Seal, Delivered.
Wow.
So we played all these tunes, you know, at Radio City for this sold out audience. Now this is astounding. And everything went fine. And that was great. Will had, and in rehearsal, he could hear himself and, you know, all that. When it came time for the performance, he had no sound.
Oh, my God.
He played those four songs by muscle memory.
Are you kidding?
I am not kidding.
Wow.
And it was astounding.
It was. It's, I saw it.
Huh?
I didn't, who would know that?
Who would know that? I mean, you can hear, I think only Sir Duke And maybe a bit of happy birthday at the end, because it's a but Sir Duke is on YouTube. You can hear, you know, Sir Duke, Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
Tony Bennett's 91st. Sounds great. Second of airtime, but that's me. Anyway. No,
and still that's an, see, now that just goes to show, and here's the lesson to be learned from that. You always have to be prepared and, you know, do your homework, do whatever's needed to whatever has to get done. And you've always been like that because, you know, you're professional, and that's what, why people call you at the last minute like that, because they know you're going to be able to do the job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And then even, and then having Tom there, who you've played with before, he's assuring everybody, oh, this is going to be fine. This is going to be good, I'm sure. And then Stevie probably be, you know, he was grouchy probably because they were making him do things all day. And he, you know, he was probably crying.
That's true.
Stevie Wonder.
I think Tom Scott was the guy who actually convinced them, we gotta, you know, go, you do a plan at that point, a plan C, you know?
Right.
So Tom, I think he convinced them to, anyway, it was a great experience. And, I mean, a lot of it is, in that particular case, you know, you just hope you're right for the gig. Like it's music that we know and love and mostly have played in one way or another. I have to say, playing Signed, Sealed, Delivered with Stevie Wonder was, everybody plays that song faster than he does. He plays it record tempo. It's one of those songs that over time, people just go, ding, 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 ding.
Maybe it's fine,
but it ain't that with him. With him, it's ding, 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 ding. So if it's in your wiring and you're wired, you know, you bring yourself back a little bit.
Yeah. But well, let's face it. I mean, you know, it's, the energy is, you know, and were you nervous at all? Like, did you have to, were you a little nervous or stressed, or you were calm by the time it was ready to go?
Yeah, I was nervous. I mean, look, in a situation like that, you know, you got no time to, you know, to sort anything out. You know, I'm running into Radio City and motorcycle boots and, you know, torn up jeans and without really knowing, I mean, I assumed I was like, yeah, I can play Sir Duke and I know this stuff and sure, I you know, thank you for the call and all that, but you know, there's always an element of you hope that he's gonna feel the same way about it, that you hope he's gonna appreciate that.
As
sidemen, and I've spent a life being a sideman, you always need, you know, they have to like you. They have to like what they're hearing. So anyway, a little bit nervous, but not I don't let it get in the way.
Right. Yeah. And I like the fact of what you said, because it happens so fast. You know, you don't have time to think about it. And that's always the best thing, because the more you think about something, you know, everybody overthinks. So if you would have had 2 weeks to say, you know, every day you'd be thinking about, wow, I'm going to play with Stevie Wonder, I'm going to play with Stevie, you know, maybe nerves would get in the beginning. But of course, you would be fine by the time you got to that point. But when things happen, you know, spontaneous like that and that quick, you're right. You don't have time to think. Sometimes that's the best thing, because you're not thinking. You're just doing
it. You're focused. Yeah.
The blinders are on and you go for the gig.
That's right. Sometimes it works out at best that way. I mean, for the most part, you can never, or almost never over prepare. So I just want to emphasize that I think that, that really, really, really preparing, you know, when you have the opportunity to do so, of course, is one of the best tools you can have. But yeah, there are situations where you just, and once you're there, no matter how little or how much preparation you have, when you talk about overthinking, that's noise, right? That's the noise in your brain. What's he going to think? How's it working? Is this work? Get all that, get away from that. You know, when you look at some of the drummers that are your heroes, chances are they focus, but they don't let the noise of that noise get in the way.
Right. Great advice. Very good advice. So now we were talking a little bit about Broadway, and of course, you know, I'm not a Broadway guy myself, except for the shows like that are like concerts. Like that's why I loved Beautiful so much. It was like story VH1 storytellers, you know, and the band was fantastic. You were great. And, you know, so what besides Beautiful, what other plays? I know you did Miss Maisel, the TV show, right?
You'll do that. So that, and that is not, yeah, I still do that. I did almost all the music for season 4, which you're about to see. So that's an Amazon series, not a musical. Those are recording sessions.
Right.
But in terms of, I think I've overall done 12 or 13 Broadway shows. The longest running ones were Hairspray and Beautiful, but there've been a lot of others.
And that's mostly reading charts, right?
Yes. So there's if you're gonna originate a show, right? If the show starts with you, it's a little different in that you're gonna have a chance with these musical numbers. They're workshops, and they call them readings and workshops and things. All those things that lead up to an actual show often have the drummer as an integral part of it. Might just be a drummer and music director and maybe like one other keyboard player. So two keyboard players maybe and a drummer. Sometimes it's a bass player and a drummer. Sometimes you get a rhythm section, sometimes you don't. There's all sorts of variations, right? But the point is that with most of the shows that I've done, I was the first drummer. So whatever it was, Catch Me If You Can, Footloose, going way back, Bonnie and Clyde,
people should after this podcast, people should discover you a little bit more, because I know you don't do that much press, and you don't, you know, you're not one of those guys that are always out there in everybody's face, which is good and bad, but
that's,
you know,
right.
But people should look you up now. They should take an interest in and look up your career, because, you know, it's impossible to cover your whole career in an hour. This Modern Drummer podcast is brought to you by Vibes High Fidelity Earplugs. You might have seen them on TV Shark Tank. They're reusable earplugs designed for musicians and concert goers. Instead of blocking and muffling the sound, Vibes reduce the volume of loud live music to a safer and more comfortable level while allowing you to hear every note. Now, we all know as musicians, we all have to take care of our ears. So hearing damage is a big problem. And as you get older, it becomes more and more of a problem. So you want to start protecting yourself now at a young age. And even us old guys, we want to keep our hearing. And girls, everybody, you want to protect your hearing. Your ears are just as important as anything else. So go to the Vibes website. And if you go to www.discovervibes.com and use the promo code DRUMMER, you'll get a 15% discount off and free shipping. Discovervibes.com. Protect your hearing and still hear the music.
It's a very interesting point to me, this, the whole press thing. It's always been around. And I think a lot of times people, especially when they've played with, famous artists and maybe have had long standing gigs with those artists and toured with those artists, and they wind up being the guys that most people are aware of. There's a in New York and in LA and Nashville and other cities on a smaller level, let's say, there's a group of musicians on every instrument that may wind up staying under the radar as far as the industry is concerned. But they are the musicians who are doing
work,
all of the work in these cities. For the most part, they're not the poster boys, they're not on the front pages of the magazines, but they are. Look, if for me, the most important thing always was to be as great a drummer as I could possibly be, in whatever that meant. I did not see myself, gee, I wish I could be in this famous rock band and tour. I never, ever saw that. Like, I got fascinated with studio musicians and the guys who could move from one kind of music to another kind of music to another kind of music and make everybody happy and get paid, and the phone rings, and then it's another thing like that. If I could synopsize my career, that's what it would be. You know, with a lot of different artists, some of them famous, some you never heard of, gigs that are high profile, gigs that are low profile, recording sessions of all different kinds. You know, while we're talking, I see there's a text from a producer. I'm happy that he wants me in. He produces for television shows, and you'll never see my name on it.
Right. Because it's a job. You see, a lot of people, you know, they even forget. Even, I mean, anybody would love to have your career, and there are different levels of a career, you know, or different themes or whatever you want to call them, you know, different projects. But I like that you do so much, and that's actually harder than just playing with one band, playing the same songs for 20, 30 years, you know.
It's a different kind of skill. It's a different kind of skill, and I'm not advocating one thing versus another,
point that I wanted to make was, even those guys who are in those bands and they're so-called rock stars, people that are up and coming, you know, growing up and they want to be a rock star, they don't realize that's a lot of work. That's also work. It's a job. You know, yes. The music business, you know, we all grew up. That's why record companies take advantage of musicians even to this day. And I don't care if I get in trouble for saying that because it's a fact. But, you know, musicians, they're soft, they're kind, you know, they're kind-hearted, they're soft. They get taken advantage of because musicians will play for free. And record company people from the 40s to now know this. So it's getting better, but even though they don't teach you that this is a job.
We're horrible business people. We're horrible business people. We were never taught that. And also, you know, you're right. Like, there's a certain value that gets ascribed to our work versus, you know, but yeah, it's and I don't know, you know, if it's getting better. I mean, the thing is that there's more money in you know, economists say there's so much money in music, but it's not going to us. I mean, right. Now what happened is, like, as the record labels, you know, kind of had to succumb to you know, Apple and Spotify and all those things, there's a lot of money being made, but we're still not seeing
it. it's not coming to the artist, and it's wrong. You know, I saw a thing the other day. It went out. You know, I get in trouble all the time, so I don't care. You know, I had a picture of the guy. I don't even remember his name. It doesn't really matter. Who owns Spotify? He's actually worth more money than Paul McCartney.
There it is.
Now, I don't care what anybody says. I don't care who he is. If you're watching this, you're wrong. You know, that's not that. You know, that's greed, and that's, like, you know, that's what's killing our business and music. You know. Yeah, if music is free, okay, that's the way this generation, you know, it's our own fault too, because we all know when we were playing, and if you were making it in a band, you're making a CD, you wanted to give your CD for free because all of a sudden you can make a CD in your closet, you know, so you want to give it away for free. So, you know, that generation kind of already,
that ship has sailed.
Over and done with. But now with Spotify and Apple and everybody else, you know, it's just not right. It's just the business end of it is just not right. So nowadays,
it's a tough way to make a living, isn't it?
Yeah, Nowadays, people really have to pay attention to the business, because otherwise you're not going to make a living.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, so, yeah, along those lines, I guess the best thing you could – and listen, a lot of guys, you know, going back to your point about the rock bands, et cetera, you know, most guys were freelancers before they walked into – you know, into any success with a major rock band. Also, the percentage, it's like the percentage of actors that become movie stars.
Right.
Percentage right. of musicians that wind up playing with really successful rock bands are like 0.00001.
Right.
It's
and they're still hired guns, unless it's you're a band member and it's your right. band. That see, there's three different, you know, there's so many different scenarios.
Yes,
there you are. If you're part of a band and the band gets successful, then you're all doing it together. But, you know, let's face it, money problems come in and business problems come in, and then there's a different kind of problems.
Yes.
So the business end of it is very, very important. And I know we're probably around the same age, and growing up, no one ever taught that. Thank God now in the schools, you know, that's being taught. And we, with Modern Drummer Magazine, we try to teach that as much as teaching you how to play a paradiddle, or, you know, how to play a certain beat. You have to know the back end of what's going on, because it's very important, and it's not easy. Now, talking about that, how did you, were you okay during the pandemic? I mean,
Broadway was
shut down, but still was.
Yeah, well, my show on Broadway had ended before the pandemic. So Beautiful ended in October. What happened? I think at the time I was doing these recording sessions, we were almost finished with the West Side Story project, and I was doing also symphony concerts with Paul Schaefer. Paul Schaefer has a symphony. We're going to do three of them coming up. So he's got like these symphony concerts, and that was a groove. So being a rhythm section within an orchestra, a couple different orchestras, those were happening. That was happening in Cincinnati. That was the last concert I played, and then COVID hit. When COVID hit, I wound up doing some of these, like a bunch of us wound up doing some of these co-videos, I called them, co-videos. So Beautiful had won, the cast of Beautiful did, I think they got almost 1 million hits. That was You've Got a Friend, and Carol King was on that.
Nice.
I did another one that was for Hairspray, I think was also close to 1 million hits. And then I did a bunch of others that were less. I have a studio here, which is right behind me. So I wound up recording for a few people. I wound up doing a musical that was playing. It was the music for a musical in the making. And I think it was nominated for a Grammy. I wound up playing for a few jazz records here. And whatever projects came along, most of them were benefits for, you know, one organization or another.
Right.
Anything that required an audience, there were a couple things they did, but it's like the winter time, the doors were open, you know, we had masks while we were playing. Then at a point, TV was back up and running. So Maisel started Amazon. It's an Amazon series. You have to test twice before. You had to test twice before doing a recording session. Then you had to test once as it wanes a little bit. You know, the protocols were strict in the recording studios. All those sessions for Maisel and I just did one for an HBO series. I think an HBO series called The Staircase.
That's the thing. It's like, look how you work now. People, you brought up West Side Story right now. That's like the thing that everyone is talking about. You know, Steven Spielberg. I mean, West Side Story. You know, a whole new generation is going to be introduced now. A little update to, and you did the music for that. Now you see, that's what I love about people who like you and do those kind of gigs. It's like You don't have to be in the spotlight, but if somebody says to you, hey, you know, you playing? You still playing? What are you doing? I just did, you know, the music to West Side Story. I mean, that's it. Yeah. It's like...
Well, that, you know, as I said earlier, all I want, I just wanted to play. This was the hardest thing about the pandemic for me, and probably for most of us. But what my life wound up being, what my career wound up being, was a series of projects, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And those projects involve working for an artist, working for an orchestra. I play with the New York Pops at Carnegie Hall a lot. I get sound files. I get, you know, like it's the MP3s and it's the PDFs. MP3s and PDFs. MP3s and PDFs. Over and over and over and over again. You print this stuff out, you work on it, you work on it, you work on it. Sometimes you work on two projects at the same time. That goes away. New set of MP3s and PDFs. So anyway.
So when, you were good. You
when were all good. Of that stops. No, what I'm saying, Billy, is like, when that goes away, right? Which it did during the pandemic.
Oh, it did.
Well, yeah, because you're preparing for either recording session or a live concert. And mostly,
I'm talking about like the tracks going back and forth.
Oh, the tracks going back and forth. For recording sessions that you're doing at home, you can always do that at home when people want. Yeah, so there were a bunch of those. And I was fortunate that way, but it was, you know, it was dribs and drabs in comparison, right?
Right.
I appreciated them and I enjoyed recording. And sometimes those things don't make their way into your world if you don't have time, you know, but I did appreciate that. But I guess what I'm about to say is that during the pandemic, when I sat down at the drums, Billy, I kind of didn't know what to play. Because life had become, my music world had become being a function of everybody else's project, one after another. And now, like, well, what's important to me? Well, I don't have time to think about that because I'm preparing this is the next gig, which I'm back to doing now, thank God, you know, but it still hasn't come back full force.
Right, right.
So the pandemic was hard in that way. And then finally I started to just practice stuff to practice it, you know, and get turned on by different drummers and things they were doing.
And did you know how to work your studio before the pandemic? Like,
yes.
Yeah, okay. Because that forced a lot of people now, even with the Modern Drummer Festival that we're doing this year, it's going to air on Christmas Day and then 3 months after. You know, same as last year, we have to stream it. So everybody's sending in their videos. But we noticed last year, we had to put it together so fast. You know, this year, the quality of everyone sending in their videos is pretty impressive because everybody learned how to run their studio.
Yes, yes. It's a whole different thing. You know, suddenly you're dealing with cameras and you're dealing. Now, I've had a Pro Tools studio here for a while. Right. And
you were already ahead of the game in that respect.
I already had it going, but I wound up using it more, I think, consecutively during the pandemic. But, you know, anyways.
And that also had to do with time, too, because you had more time.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So
that's the good thing about having your own studio. And now everybody pretty much has, you know, everybody has a studio nowadays. And, you know. I feel sorry for all the engineers that, you know, that everyone relied on because they had to force themselves to learn how to do it themselves.
Yes. It was good. I mean, so now that the pandemic, I mean, look, who knows where we're going with it, but it's waned so that we're functioning enough. And I've been doing live sessions again, and concerts and clubs. I'm going to Europe tomorrow. To do a little tour with Manhattan Transfer, the vocal group. And so I'm a little nervous about that because things over there get different depending on what country and protocols, and they're changing every minute and who knows. But,
yeah. Well, so Safe travels, please be safe.
Yes, but it is important. I think one thing is that it is super important. Your mindset when you're recording at home is a little different than it is when you're in the room with everybody, not just because they're there, but because the way you make decisions about what you're going to do and how fast you're going to come up with that and what's driving it. You know, if in the same moment I'm getting a direction from a producer, I'm hearing a bass line from the bass player, I'm hearing this person's reference vocal, everything is happening right then and there. It's going to inform you when right. you get tracks and, oh yeah, well, we want to put you down first. And then the bass is going to go on top of that. You're making decisions. You're also self-producing a little bit, but you're making decisions and you know, you could sit there in your pajamas and you say, okay, I'll work out for this. And I'm not happy with that, Phil. This doesn't sound perfect to me. Right. So I'm going to do that over again. I'm going to do the whole thing over again. You know what? I'm going to go get some dinner and then do it more.
Come back. And the other thing too is like, there's no spontaneity. You know, when you play with other musicians, you hear something that somebody might've made a mistake. They were going a different direction. All of a sudden you're like, oh wow, that's pretty cool. You know, if you got to play the drums yourself or you're just hearing a scratch vocal, that could change. You know, you're putting a drum, you're putting a fill in. Nowadays, of course, because it's on a grid and everything's going, they could move it, but it's not the same. You might have done a different kind of fill.
Absolutely. And this brings us to a really important point, which is I'm observing more than I've ever observed, right? Everybody is putting stuff up and it's play-alongs. Lots of play-alongs. And there's a lot of value to that. The, right. you know, the analogy is, remember Music Minus One?
Yeah.
When we were kids, Music Minus One. So same concept. So let's say, you know.
Kind of prepared us.
Right. You got the play-alongs, you know, Tommy Igoe's great book with all the, you know, the grooves and all of that. So, but there is a big, big problem, which is that if you really, really want to function as a musician in the music business, it's a group effort all of the time. It's like being alone and trying to learn conversational Spanish.
Right.
It ain't gonna work. I mean, and part of the most important part of being a musician is how you interfacing, interacting, being affected by, affecting, guiding, you know, others.
Well, as you said, that's the conversation.
That's all lost when you're by yourself. Now, you got to practice, and play-alongs are great and all of that stuff. But I worry a lot about this, that getting together with people has been sort of lowered as a priority. I think there's a lot of people who don't understand that you can become a competent drummer with these play-alongs, but not functioning as a musician in the music business. Does that make sense?
That's all great advice. Thank you so much for that. So let's talk a little bit more about the West Side Story project, because I mean, that's going to be huge.
Yeah. Oh, so the that came about, I had done some work with a music producer for film prior. And he requested me. He's out in LA, but he came here. I think Spielberg wanted to record it in New York, and there were some important forces that convinced him to do that. It being a New York story, Leonard Bernstein, New York Philharmonic, etc. So when the contractor called me, I had to be. I didn't say yes right away. I found West Side Story. I never did West Side Story before, never played it. And the music ranges from somewhat difficult to outrageously difficult. And I always found it to be a little daunting. And it came across my plate a couple of times. There was a production that they did on Broadway. And I said no to it because I had a busy touring schedule at the time. There was another thing that happened at Carnegie Hall, was a piece of it, and I said no to it I had other work, but I think behind these decisions, I was just a little daunted by it. So I had to be convinced, and I talked to a couple of my friends, and they said, yeah, you know, you just work on it and you can do it, and you know. But there's things about, first of all, I had never worked with the New York Philharmonic before. It's a beast. I mean, that's
incredible.
They're unbelievable. They were also, it was also Gustavo Dudamel, who is the world famous rock star conductor, who's out in, he's out in Los Angeles, but he had an association with this. If you go online and plug in his name with Mambo, which is one of the pieces in West Side Story, you'll see some great footage of him conducting, in South America. At any rate, it took me a little while to, and then I just embraced it, locked myself in a room, and, again, listened to, studied the music, listened to the recordings, cast album, the movie, getting as much information, the original cast album, the more recent cast album, et cetera, et cetera. So you study. And then there was some, there's mixed in with the drum set part is also some concert snare drumming part, some delicate, very, very accurate stuff and a different set of muscles. And
a little bit more orchestral, certain parts, and
very much orchestral. Yeah, very much orchestral. Doesn't sound like drum set at some times. It sounds like, concert snare drumming. And there are guys who do that are just absolutely extraordinary, right? So, you have to be able to. So anyway, all of that stuff was stuff I had to work on, refresh, get his, discover.
Get the noise out.
Now there's also the whole concept, which we could talk about for 2 days, of a rhythm section player following a conductor. In Broadway world, they wind up knowing that they're dealing with people who are not generally symphonic players. What symphonic players look for in a conductor is different than what rhythm section players who sometimes play in orchestras look for in a conductor. What we look for is time. We look for obvious patterns where we can see what they call an ictus, which is a place where you can see a downbeat and you could get that kind of information. I can only relate it to listening to a click. So what you need is some sort of reference. It's not going to be a click because it's live and but doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. So, somebody explained in very broad terms to me years ago that a lot of times what you respond to is, let's say instead of playing when you think you're supposed to be playing, which is when the thing hits down, the downbeat, people are making sounds when it comes up. A lot of times, especially in a symphonic setting, a lot of times what happens is you'll think you're supposed to be playing when there's, as I said, it's an ictus, right? So ictus is the point of when the baton comes down, as it, if it's sort of, as soon as it hits that point, that's when you make a sound. But no, this is the thing that's kind of a mind fuck, if you will. So it's almost like somebody described it once as if you're at a light and the light and you're standing at the light and the light turns green, there's a delay. And the further back you are, the longer the delay. Oh, in the line, right?
Right, right.
You have this beautiful orchestra, this living, breathing mechanism, and they know this music, and they're together. So the conductor is sort of giving them information that helps mold them, brings them along, moves them, quiets them, helps them be more expressive, elongates a phrase, shorts, all sorts of things that they know to look for, and they know how to read a good conductor. But they're not looking for exactly the same things we as rhythm section players are looking for in a conductor. And so one conversation I had with Steve Reinecke, who I consider a great conductor, and he's the guy at the New York Pops, he says, so let me just ask you, all you guys really want to know is like a clear tempo, clear time, right? And I said, yes. And that's oftentimes oftentimes you're not going to get that, and it becomes harder. Because again, like you're, you know, especially if you're there with an artist, sometimes I do these concerts with orchestras where the artist brings me, but I'm in an orchestra. So you got the music director who's with the artist, you got the drummer, you got the artist, and then you have the conductor. The conductor is now translating all this information from the music director and the artist to the orchestra.
Right, so and he's just doing it his way, which is his way.
He's got to communicate the information in a way that the orchestra can read.
Right.
Sometimes, and this is a little trick that I learned. Sometimes when I'm sitting behind the drums and I'm watching and I need to know what's about to happen, it's not necessarily intuitive, the phrase is not already going, whatever. There's some new something that's going to happen. I got my eyes looking so that I can see the music director, I can see the artist, and I can see the conductor all at the same time. They're sort of all in my field of vision, and I'm taking in stuff that's going to happen because the drummer winds up translating and keeping everybody together, just like he would in another situation.
Right, right. It's just a bigger situation.
Yeah, you got more...
And that's not easy to do because, you know, that's not easy to do because, you know, that's a distraction. You know, having to worry about all that. That's kind of a distraction.
Yeah, you have
to. You know, to me, reading was always a little bit of a distraction. That's why I never really got into reading. But I never wanted to be that, you know, that kind of drama. I wanted to write my own songs, be in a band, you know, that. So it was a different thing. But, you know, it's the guys like you, I mean, I admire because you can do all that, you know, it's like, and then the more you do it, of course, the better you get at it. But in your case, it's always a different situation because it's so many different types of things. So before we go, what's the plans? What's the future plans now? It's the end of the year. What's for next year, 2022?
Well, so, I mean, the things that I know about for sure are these symphony concerts I have with Paul Schaefer. I have some recording projects, and my suspicion is that, and I work with a couple of artists who are concert, who do concerts. And so my suspicion is that it will be more of the same and stuff I can't anticipate. You know, in a perfect world, everything just kicks back in as it was before the pandemic. And I think we all feel that and want that, right?
Right.
So, you know, as everybody becomes a little more comfortable, you know, the stuff ramps up. But, you know, TV and film stuff I love to do, and live gigs will be there, you know. And
unfortunately, we're still in that mode of one day at a time because nobody knows.
That's right. Ticket sales are funny because people still feel a little funny about going to things. Although, you know, depending on where you are, you know, like the shows are up and running, concerts are up and running. I've been to concerts as a spectator.
Yeah, me too. Now I've been going back out, and you know, it's I got my booster. You know, I got my two shots, my booster. I mean, what else can we do?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But we'll get. Listen,
Clint, I want to thank you so much.
Thank you, Billy. Time. Thank you, man.
Yeah, this was pleasure this to talk fun. To you. It's always good to see you, and hopefully we'll see each other in person pretty soon, and
I think so.
people should, you know, check out Clint's resume. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I mean, besides, we only touched a little bit of what he's been doing. So, you know, this is how, you know, everybody learns. You know, you want to learn from people that you may not be familiar with, you know. So here's your opportunity and here's your chance. And then you'll say, oh, I know that. Oh, wow, he did that. He did this. You know, that's how it works.
Yeah, well, you know, as long as the phone keeps ringing, I'm perfectly happy to stay sort of under the radar. It's always how I've functioned anyway. It's worked out okay for me.
No, it's a beautiful thing. You know, it's a beautiful thing.
Thank you, man. Thanks
so
for
everybody. Thank you so much. Don't forget the Modern Drummer Festival will stream. It will debut on Christmas. So spend Christmas with Modern Drummer. It's going to be pretty cool. I've seen it, so I know it's going to be pretty cool. I think you'll enjoy it. Bye, Clint. Thank you.
Bye, Billy. Thank you, man. Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.